and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
Your heart's really not in this, Chad. I'm Mark Marvel.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 618.
That's right. Starbreaker supremacy continueth. So do we. We persist.
Such a weird cover.
Yeah.
Completely.
I like the concept, especially because it's like a joint cover thing, which we haven't had one of those in a little bit. But yeah.
I guess if you look at it from the perspective that maybe what some of the shit on this cover, which does not absolutely none of it, actually almost none of it occurs in this issue. But if you look at the belief that it's going to occur, but you know, in the next issue or two. So then you put the two covers together and it's kind of just telling the story of what's going on as a whole, then maybe. But again, it's a nice looking cover, but it hasn't really has nothing to do with what's going on in this issue. But. Should we really be surprised at this point? So, Green Lantern Corps 8, Starbreaker Supremacy, Quattro. All right, so let's try to do a bare-bones wrap-up of this. Back on the castle, the Desolate Stone. Nate now is having second thoughts. Literally second thoughts, because he has no second feelings, because he has no feelings. But he's starting to figure out that, you know, maybe not having any feelings at all is worse than having feelings and just feeling sorrow. So he's starting to realize that this might have been a mistake helping Starbreaker build this central power battery, which is siphoning all the emotions. While he's having this moment of reflection, some of the other Starbreakers / Sun Eaters are quarreling amongst themselves about, you know, how Starbreaker is really keeping the power to himself and keeping us in the dark because he's not sharing the knowledge from the Book of Oa. And at this point, Starbreaker and whatever the hell the other nameless, his nameless associate, who Hal and company kicked their ass at the end of last issue, they come crashing down to Earth, quote unquote, crashing down. And Starbreaker is crying out for help. And he says, we have to gather the forces because the Green Lantern Corps is on its way. We get a little recap of what happened last issue and the agreement between the entities and the Green Lantern Corps. We don't know where Kyle is. Let's just state this right off the bat. Last time we saw Kyle at the end of last issue, I believe he was the one back on Ion. But Kyle's not to be seen at all in this issue. We don't know. We assume we'll find out next issue where Kyle's been. But Hal's back on Ion, which is okay because it's Hal, but it's just kind of weird. So the entities, you know, the entities and their riders attack the Castle of the Desolate Stone. Starbreaker gets, you know, he gets a new ring. And his arm miraculously is able to just grow back because of his powers and everything else. And they prepare for all out war to kill, you know, to kill the entities. And that's what their target, that's what their goal is. Cause he realizes the reason why they've been able to regain the emotional spectrum powers is because of the entities. Sinestro is really enjoying just cutting things apart as he slices another Sun Eater guy in half. During the battle, Joe, which at least this answers a question and a point of contention we had about how is Joe going to be able to basically handle an entity when she barely knows what she's doing. Well, she really can't. She pretty much gets knocked off Ophidian almost immediately and gets rescued by Guy because he's feeling a whole lot of compassion since he's hanging out with Proselyte. That part I like. One of the cooler panels, I suppose, in the entire book is when all the Starbreakers, all the Sun Eaters, a power up from the power battery, and they juice up, and then that pretty much gives them an advantage that they go after the entities. one of the Starbreakers gets attacked by the Butcher, Predator, and it gets swallowed, and we think, hey, he's going to do this, and all of a sudden, the Predator's eye just indicates, oh, there's a problem, and from the inside out, he is withering because his emotional energy is being absorbed inside. And he says that the Predator is dead. Kind of seems like a lame way for the Predator to go. Plus, Carol doesn't really lose her power. She doesn't lose her tie to the Spectrum, so maybe he's really not dead. But Hal rescues Carol and puts him on Ion. Nate's absorbing all this. As this battle is playing out, and you see the entities are starting to have trouble, but this is where Nate kind of also realizes that it makes perfect sense why Carol and Hal are perfect together, and that basically what he's done by taking away all the emotion in the universe, he's not only cost them like their chance of happiness or what they deserve, he's basically cost everyone this problem, or caused this problem for everyone and cost everyone what they should normally be feeling and what they could feel. So he makes his way into the central power battery on Desolate Stone and shatters it. He destroys it, probably a little too easy considering he's really has no powers at this moment. But when this happens, there's literal fallout as Kilowog's trying to shield himself, and it almost looks like the Parallax Jr. is trying to shield Kilowog a little bit. But either way, this entity gets crushed by fragments, I'm going to assume, with a power battery. He looks withered on the next page, so maybe it was a combination of he was being drained at the same time, or they drained what was left of him. But it would appear this knockoff fear entity that we had gotten for like one issue is gone already. Now, the Green Lantern Corps they pretty much have to scatter. They pretty much have been routed, and now they have to go back. They have to retreat and go back to, just like Starbreaker had to retreat at the end of last issue. And Starbreaker is rallying his troops so they can go and finish the Green Lantern Corps. Now we go to Oa, and Kelly wakes up and she goes, well, that was a strange dream. And because the emotional spectrum is technically no longer being drained, now we have Ellie Rose comes over and he says, now she finishes the thought that she was telling Kelly multiple issues ago. You know, the door in your mind, I know what it is. And Kelly's like, what are you talking about? What door? And then she realizes, Kelly does, she's not wearing her gauntlet anymore. And Ellie Rose goes, it belongs to an ancient evil Malthusian who should be dead. No shit. Someone named Krona. And then we get a splash page of Simon looking all evilly, wearing the gauntlet, which is fine with me. Only if it would be the end of Simon, which we know it won't be. So next issue says, the Mad Guardian Krona is back, unleashed on Oa during the Starbreaker Corps' invasion in Green Lantern 27. Now we want to go back to the creative team for what it's worth on this sucker. So Starbreaker Supremacy Part 4, Morgan Hampton and Jeremy Adams, writers, Fernando Pissarin and Claire Albert, artists, Arif Prianto, colorist, Dave Sharp, litterer, V. Ken Marion and Pasquale Ferrara, cover artists, and we have a whole bunch of variant cover artists. I guess there's a whole Hispanic Heritage Month variant cover artist too. Leonardo Romero, my screen got cut off. Assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Kathleen Wineski, and group editor Paul Kaminsky. And that's all she wrote.
That last page with Simon, is that, you think Daryl Banks inspired, or do you think just typical perspective of somebody wielding some sort of evil gauntlet to say you got to have a crazed look in their eye type of thing?
No, I mean, you say that now, and I think I can understand maybe a little, though, of course, the pose is not really the same. Yeah. But I think it could have, it might be slightly inspired, but I would think it's more just a normal being crazed and powered up. But it's possible. I can't shoot it down to say that it might not have been inspired.
Yeah. All right. Art on this one, this isn't my favorite style, just to be honest. Fernando Pissarin, his art in many ways reminds me of Doug Monkey, not necessarily in style per se, but in the problems that I have with it when I have problems, human faces and things like that. I will say this is probably the best image that we've seen of the entities all together in quite a long time, this double splash page. As I had mentioned previously, in that the previous core issue only saw all the entities, Ion looking like a fish or some sort of an eel, as opposed to his sort of whale-like stance. And then, of course, Adara missing two of its three faces. Those problems are not here. So I think, you know, it's a little cluttered with words and stuff like that. But I think, I mean, look at Ophidian. Incredible, for sure. And Parallax Jr., you know, say what you want about the existence of the creature to begin with. It looks pretty good there. Lots of detail on Predator there in the background, and then by comparison too, when you get two pages down and then you see the entities approaching the Starbreaker core from a distance, they all look awful.
Yeah, that is true.
But obviously just they're no longer on a double splash page. Yeah. So you don't have a lot of room to play with there. I thought it was great otherwise, artistically for the most part. You know, I didn't find very many artistic mistakes this time around. I had heard someone say, like, you know, in comparison with, you know, what, you know, Joe falls off of Ophidian and she loses the orange power, but gets the compassion power when she's on top of Proselyte with Guy. But then, you know, Carol jumping onto the back of Ion didn't change her color. Well, I think that's, I don't know who said that out there. I think that's not an artistic mistake. I think that's because her power is technically still active in the universe.
Was she, this is the part I couldn't remember. She still in her sapphire uniform even after the Desolate Stone power battery came online? We know she still had her power and she was operating normally before all the, when they were trying to power, when they were, because that's where we saw the error. That's the whole point of her talking about, hey, there's a power. We can't even build my power battery because we don't want to screw up my power. But that was before the batteries came online and before everything got channeled into the Desolate Stone battery. I don't remember a couple of issues ago when everybody was depowered if Carol was in normal gear, normal clothes or not.
Yeah, I guess technically, you know, if they fall off the entities, they should lose the power. So the only reason Carol got hers back was so, yeah, maybe it is an artistic mistake, or maybe it has something to do with whatever's going on with her abilities.
I'm going to go back and look at.
So it could, maybe it is an artistic mistake. I don't know. Either way, they could just want the juxtaposition of color in them fighting there artistically. I don't know. The supposed deaths of some or maybe all, depending on how you interpret the wording here, because, you know, their precious entities are decimated, and then we see the bones and corpse of, you know, Parallax Jr., as Mark has coined him. I don't know. Maybe they're all dead. Maybe it's just Parallax Jr. Maybe it's Parallax Jr. and Predator. Maybe it's all of them. We don't know. In any event, I don't really care, because my only critique about this particular issue, unless Mark, you bring up something that I hadn't considered and agree with or just bypassed and didn't think too hardly over. My only problem with this is Starbreaker and his brethren should not be able, whether it's because of the explosion of this battery or their own direct involvement, should not be able to take out entities. I'm sorry. I know we know about their origins and stuff and know what they are, and they're just basically the sentience, the collated essence of their respective emotion and gave sentience and all of this stuff. But I agree with something Dan said in one of his recent episodes over on Mosaic Comics, that in terms of explaining what the entities are to the audience, he described them as essentially living central power batteries. Obviously, you know, there's more to it than that, but they shouldn't be easily destroyed. So my hope here is that just be they were taken out by the either they, some of them, all of them, I don't know. Whichever ones were actually taken out were not actually taken out because they shouldn't be so easily. And that once, you know, there's balance restored and the, you know, shockwave of regular emotions goes out through the universe, that somehow that restores them. Because I don't like, I'm sorry, you didn't set up Starbreaker and his brethren enough to make me believe that they have enough of a threat behind them that they should be able to take out an entities at all.
No, I agree. And I just went back to I went back to Green Lantern Corps number 7, which is when they were approaching the Source Wall, and before they got into the Source Wall. So Carol was depowered. Okay. like everybody else. So the fact that she didn't lose her color at all. Now, again, you could make the case. You could make no, but she got not. That happened before the Desolate Stone power battery blew up. So the emotional spectrum is still screwed up. So one or two things is going on. Either one of those things obviously being it's another mistake. The other thing is maybe the Predator's really not dead, or maybe what's left of the Predator retreated and is inside Carol.
Yeah, because it looks like he sort of just fades out.
Yeah, that was really lame that he just fades. So maybe he basically phases out for self-preservation reasons and goes into Carol, which would then explain why she doesn't lose for a second, why she doesn't lose her power.
Yeah.
And
So it could be explained, but yeah. And if it is, then it's not an artistic mistake. And if it's not, then it is. So, but yeah, also... Is it possible to be self-reflective and introspective without emotion? I'm sure it is, but just because I do like Nathan, this focus on Nathan here, now that he's not just overwhelmed by the sorrow, so we can actually see him as a character in at least some sense, since it's been so long since we've seen him, you know, clear-headed, for lack of a better term. But... so I don't necessarily have a problem with using him as the vehicle for this recognition and the self-sacrifice and everything that he goes through here. But I also, you know, I just have to question, even if it's just this one's not one of the major picks that I have. So I'm not putting the emphasis and the enthusiasm behind this doubt as I normally would something else. But it was a little lost on me that he would have this moment of understanding and awakening, and that his life was better with emotion in it, and so on and so forth, despite all of its drawbacks, just because he's now thinking clearly. I feel like anytime I've ever gone through some sort of introspective moment, it's always about, you know, whatever emotion I'm feeling that's prompted that.
Well, yeah, but we don't have a choice because we can't turn off our emotions.
Yeah, that's true.
When I first read this issue last week, I had a problem with the fact that he had this epiphany seemingly out of the blue, because it seemed like it was a little too convenient. And it is, I mean, let's be honest, no matter how we slice it, it is really plot driven. It's a plot contrivance. It happens because Jeremy and Morgan Hampton, probably mostly Jeremy, he wants it to happen in this issue for a reason, because now is going to, I guess in theory, now it levels the playing field again for what's about to happen in the next issue and leading up to the conclusion. But objectively speaking, without any wallowing, without any personal stake in what's going on, which is what happens when you have an emotional stake in anything, with that being removed and Nate looking at everything playing out around him and then being forced to see Carol and Hal together and realizing, okay, I kind of denied them this is why they're perfect together, but I'm not just denying them this opportunity, I'm denying everybody this opportunity for happiness and for this and for that. Because he has no emotional connection at all to anything, I kind of buy the fact that he's able to basically do it's like a bottom line analysis that these are the pros and these are the cons. And it's like, well, maybe I think I was wrong about this. Which again, on one level is refreshing just because from the perspective that it's not like Starbreaker sold him a bill of goods. He wasn't the typical, oh, the devil whispering in your ear, make a deal with the devil. And of course, this is what you don't know. This is what the fine print is. Or they tell you something, which again, being Clinton-esque, that technically by the letter of the law, it sounds they're meeting their promise, but they're just not meeting it the way you thought they were meaning it. And in the words that in your interpretation of what you were agreeing to is not what your partner was agreeing to. But legally, technically, they're still giving you what they said they were going to give you. That this wasn't one of those deals that seemingly Nate got exactly what he expected out of this. Mind you, going along with this, that we see Nate, but we don't see any of the other peons, Disgust and everybody else. They're completely off the table. At least in this issue, that it's just Nate. But I don't know. I agree with you that I think this issue is, it's better. It's better than some of the stuff we've gotten before or recently. Mm-hmm. But I don't like what they did. I don't like what they did with the entities. I said this before that if they were just bringing the entities back just to kill them off again, then that's worse than just leaving them where they were. Now, Jim, I think I talked to Jim about this because I think we were supposed to believe, whether we did or not, that the entities were supposed to be dead anyway, even though we don't know they were dead. But something like we talked about like last week or whatever, something had to have happened over the last time we did something in this story arc. I know we did Absolute last week. That something has to, they had to have done something to replenish the emotional spectrum, the reservoir, unless the reservoir thing was garbage, which is fine if you go down that road and you explain it. But they needed to do something, which is why they were brought to the source wall across it. What did they do? So because at the time we thought they had to, you basically needed all that full replenishment. And the only way to do it was the entities would basically, they would almost like turn into liquid emotion and fill it back up to the top. That I certainly thought we were supposed to believe they were dead. Doesn't mean that we really thought they were. It's like deep down that we think they were dead. It's comics. No one's dead. But I think we were supposed to think they were dead, not like in some form of stasis. So they could have just left them where they were. So to bring them back, and if they end up killing them all, that seems ridiculous to me. That seems completely pointless, and that's actually more insulting than leaving them where they were. To me, anyway. If it turns out, well, the only one that really died is Parallax Jr., then yes, it's really lame that we even got him, but that's the reason why we got him. So they needed a sacrificial lamb for an entity. And they decided to do the one that really nobody has any ties to because it's not the real fear entity and it's not one of the other ones. So no, it accomplishes the point, but it doesn't really, but it doesn't really shake up the status quo in any level. Yeah. But we're going to find that out too. I certainly don't think they're all dead. There's no reason to think that they're all dead because we don't see anything on page that indicates that. But this might have just been a ploy to kill off Parallax Jr. to set the stage for the return of the real Parallax whenever that happens. So, and not having to conflict the two fear entities, even though we know technically if the Butcher were to survive, we have two fear entities of we have two entities. We don't know what kind of the status of the Rage Seed at the moment, but we know he's there somewhere doing his thing.
Once upon a time, long-time listeners of this show will know, Jim would often make the joke about we should start a running count of how many times Abin Sur has to die and how many times we've seen Abin Sur die on panel or his an interpretation of his death be changed in some way. We should also keep a running tally of how many times it's fucking Krona.
Yeah, which again... it doesn't bother me, and not just because I called it, because not that it was going out on much of a limb to call it, but I mean, it's a gauntlet. It's a gauntlet. There's something controlling the gauntlet, something with a plan. He built the other gauntlet. Why would he not be involved somehow with this gauntlet? It does make sense that it would be Krona. So I don't have an issue. And let's be honest, in regular continuity.
I'm not saying I have an issue with it. I just say
I know. It's mostly a joke. But yeah. I'm saying, in regular continuity, especially if you leave out Lost Army, that we haven't seen Crona since War of the Green Lanterns. So yeah. The reality is it's actually in real years. It's been a long time since we've seen Crona. So yeah. So I'm just afraid that the way it's shaping up, that he's going to come back much like the entities. He's going to come back ever so briefly, be disposed of super quickly, and that's going to be that, just to move on to something else.
Yeah. Real quick, guys, he's referring to War of the Green Lanterns, obviously, and then towards the end of that, Hal kills Crona, and the Guardians hold him responsible for this because he shouldn't be able to kill a Guardian, and regardless of whether it was Crona or not, it was still a Guardian. I think one could make the case, and I think they actually did in story at one point, that the Guardians were afraid that, you know, a Green Lantern was able to kill a Guardian with a ring. And we saw Crona's body be delivered to Atrocitus, and that's how the Red Lanterns series was going there for a while, with the Atrocitus soapboxes and holding Crona's skull and, going all Shakespearean every other issue. Woe is me, I didn't get the chance to be the one to kill you, my vengeance was never fully realized, all of that. And then we flash back to the universe before ours with Relic's universe, and somehow Crona was there. We never resolved that because we jumped into what came after Last Army. I keep forgetting the name of that six issues.
Oh God, what is
But Crona was not one of the things we followed up on. There were many threads that were not followed up on with Cullen Bunn stuff. We haven't actually seen Crona, in, as you mentioned, in continuity for quite a long while, since the New 52, basically.
Yeah. It would be really cool if somehow they tie this into that somehow. We get some acknowledgement. And I don't expect that to be the case, by the way.
In the same way, for better or for worse, Thorne followed up on the idea of John and the Mosaic. So it would be nice to, loop in some threads that haven't been touched on in a long time in a similar way. Like, again, for better or for worse, at least somebody touched on it and didn't forget the whole thing existed.
No, I would agree. I just wouldn't expect it.
Yeah. Yep. But otherwise, Edge of Oblivion. Of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, we get that one wording from that other Starbreaker Brethren where he says, the knowledge in here, and he's talking about the Book of Oa, the mysteries already he has found hidden pages, writings, and then he goes off into something else. So yeah, we're setting up this future idea that we talked about last time about, Hal's name being written in the Book of Oa and something big coming. So,
and don't forget whether they go back to it or not, too. We have the whole idea, which, again, didn't make a damn lick of sense to me. But the idea that in the Book of Oa, basically, like, if you hold the right print, if you hold that gem up to it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You see, basically, there's a whole other book of a whole other book for like each member of the each other part of the core of the core. I mean, of the
totally
spectrum.
Forgot about that. And then the solicit the spoiler solicit that we talked about with the upcoming idea that all the cores are going to be operating off of Oa. Oh yeah, I forgot that.
That could in theory tie in because within the Book of Oa essentially there's a book of every other core. I mean, conceptually. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I mean, that could be tied to Crona too in some way.
Because didn't they said they didn't know how it got there, right?
Yeah, but again,
yeah.
These Guardians are they may not be shams, or they may not be shams, but they're impotent, as opposed to the Guardians normally being impotent shams, as Hal referred to them as in Emerald Twilight. So they don't know shit at the moment. Maybe let's see if their memory gets upgraded when they take out Starbreaker and company.
All right, that's all I got.
Cool.
All right, what's next?
So the first thing that I want to. Actually, to be fair, I think it's the only thing that I really have to add. That for our fellow Funko fans, say that 8 times fast, fellow Funko fans, that there were two Funko Pops that came out today that surprisingly, considering they're Superman Pops, that we as Green Lantern fans might be very well be interested in, or you might be interested in, since they came out with the DC Comics Shield Through the Ages Pop. They had four Superman Pops through different eras and incarnations in this history. And the two that are interesting, and they dropped today as we're recording this on the 17th. And as of now, I know at least on they are still available on Big Bad Toy Store. Of course, they came out late on Big Bad Toy Store. I didn't check Entertainment Earth to see if they're still available for pre-order. But they were on Amazon, too. So these seem to be pretty much a non-exclusive pre-order. Almost any place that's selling Funkos, probably the regular Funko store, I'm going to assume, would have these two. That the two pops that would be of interest for us would be the Sinestro Corps Superman from the Fall of Sinestro storyline, which was the end of the Cullen Bunn run. And the Blackest Night, Black Lantern Superman. That was the Earth 2 Superman, right? Was that Earth 2?
Yeah, should be.
Yeah. So those two Superman, two Lantern related Superman. The packaging is kind of cool too, actually. I kind of like the packaging. That those two Superman are available for pre-order as of now, and so this comes out on Monday, as it should, late Monday. There's probably a good chance these are going to be still available for pre-order somewhere. I don't know if there's a big, super high demand on all these, even though Superman might be a little higher profile now than say normal, only because of the proximity to the movie. But nonetheless, so you have Fall of Sinestro Superman, and you have Black Lantern, Blackest Night, if you will, Superman. So.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that Superman, the Sinestro Corps Superman, is it's actually only the third Sinestro Corps member that we have seen in Funko form, aside from we've seen Sinestro in Funko form, but only in his original costume with yellow energy around him. I believe it's an image I think from Rebirth. And then we have White Lantern Sinestro, and then we have Sinestro from the Green Lantern movie. The two different ones, the regular one and the metallic one, which is $1,000 if you can find it out there. We've actually never had Sinestro in his Sinestro Corps outfit. We've had Wonder Woman.
Yes. Which is on clearance, by the way. It's
a great figure, by the way.
Yeah, it's not considerably cheap, but in Big Bad Toy Store, I think it might be like $10, because when I first was searching for it today, waiting for these to drop at noon, when they didn't drop right away at noon, that the only thing that kept coming up when you looked for Fall of Sinestro was the Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and then and Mark and I bought a couple of these. Did we ever talk about it on air? The Freddy Funkos.
I don't know, which is funny because I did just get a white one like about 2 weeks ago. So I have the white, orange, and blue.
Was it San Diego? It was one of the cons. Basically, they do what's known as Funko Fridays, or I don't know, something. Some sort of party/thing that Funko does at various Comic Cons. I know it's more. It's happened at like WonderCon as well. So I don't know if it was SDCC or what. But they released their mascot, Freddy Funko, is they do these Funkos all the time. If Freddy Funko is, God, I don't know, freaking Jason X, you know, like whatever. Like they'll do like random just Freddy Funko as figures all the time. And they're often very limited. They did, for those of you who don't know, and I'm sorry if we didn't report it on air, they did a Blue Lantern Freddy Funko and a Yellow Lantern, a White Lantern, an Orange, a Red, a Blue, like all these other things. And a lot of them, I don't think all of them, but a lot of them had variants. So there'd be the regular solid colored one and then a translucent one where the yellow part, for example, the colored piece would be made of a translucent material. And it just varied which one was the rare and which one wasn't. So we have had a Yellow Lantern Freddy Funko. So this is the only third true Yellow Lantern Funko we've had.
And it does not appear that these are available on the regular Funko website. I just looked now. They are still available as we're recording this on Entertainment Earth. They should all be on Amazon, because that's why I actually ordered my Sinestro one from Amazon, because Big Bad was slow in getting these uploaded. But it does not appear that the regular Funko site had these. But yeah, so you had Superman from the 50s, which is a black and white variation. You have Golden Age Superman, you know, which is kind of an interesting figure, classic, original Superman. And then you have the Blackest Night and the Sinestro ones. So only two real modern age Superman, which is kind of interesting. The ones that they chose this time around, which are really, they did a nice job with them though.
Yeah, design wise, I actually like Black Lantern better than Yellow Lantern.
I think I would agree with you from a design perspective. I just have no real ties to that character. I mean, I know he died heroically in Infinite Crisis, which yeah. I really like. But it was, to be fair, one of the first Black Lanterns we actually got to spend any time with, because of the fact that that miniseries, that Superman three-part miniseries.
Oh, yeah, the Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman was one of the first ones.
Yeah, that came out very early. But
the corpse of Kal, or the Black Lantern of Kal-El, not E-L-L, was one of the first lanterns to appear, right? We had Martian Manhunter, and I think Kal-El was the second one. Oh, maybe third after Arthur.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It's been a while going back to that. But based on my collecting patterns, I would say, not that they've done really many Black Lantern Funko Pops, which is a shame. You think that was a missed opportunity, especially when we had the anniversary to just do a whole series. Even if it was only going to be a series of five, not necessarily like two waves of four, but that was a golden opportunity that was wasted. But based on my collection patterns, to me, getting a Sinestro Corps Superman would probably made more sense than getting a zombie Superman. I mean, I don't think I would have gotten Black Lantern Batman too if it was the Black Lantern, which we know wasn't really Batman. But I mean, still, I don't think, just because the design is cool, I don't think I would have just gotten that one either. So
also, did you realize that the Classics Funko Pops, and I forget if you had mentioned this or not, so apologies, that they also did a keychain version?
Yes. I don't think we mentioned it. Yes, I did. I was aware of it. Yes.
Yeah. I'm looking at it on Entertainment Earth right now.
You're going to get that too? Or you're just going to get the pop?
No, I'm going to get the regular. Other than green, specifically Green Lantern cover Funkos, I am not getting anything that is a non-standard size Funko. It just because the shelves that I have all over this place, you start playing a dicey game in terms of storage, and if you get anything other than a standard size Funko Pop. I've decided to get the Green Lantern cover ones because I have a very specific spot for those. otherwise I don't get like the deluxes or the life size. The only exception I made was the Walmart, or I think it was a Walmart exclusive Godzilla, where he was kind of more blue than anything. I got the jumbo one, and I have it sit. I was out of box on top of one of my speakers. It looks badass. And I guess the only other exception I'll be making is that stupid sleeping space Godzilla.
Oh, you are gonna. I figured you would get. But see, it takes up. But the good news about him is he takes up space in a different way. It's not height.
Yeah.
It's length. So that's an easier thing to find a place for, because and they still have him 60% off, but he was cheaper. They had the 10-inch Galactus with Silver Surfer black light version. They had that in Big Bad Toy Store like a month or so ago during some of their weekly or daily sales. I think it was down to like $12. I was really, really, really tempted. Really tempted to get it. I think I waffled enough by the time I went back to it. Then I knew the price had gone back up again. Kind of like now it's like $18.40, which is still not bad, considering it's a 10-inch pop. But yeah. I decided not to. And then once I realized the price, you know, the price went back up, it's like, okay. But putting it in perspective, I mean, even though that's only a six, that they say that's a supersized 6-inch pop, the Galactus from the movie. That's like $24.99. Meanwhile, you get he looks like he's slightly more out of proportion. That 10-inch black light Galactus is with the Silver Surfer is only $18.40. So if I was gonna get one, I probably would get the one with the Silver Surfer. Plus the black light one would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I have an order from Funko on the way. It'll be here in the next day or two. And it's I finally placed an order on Funko for that the word bubble one.
Oh, yes. The Howl one.
But while I was on there, they had a symbiote pop I didn't have and didn't know was out there, which is a Spider-Man one where it's Venom's enveloping him. You can still see Spidey's mask, but otherwise the symbiote is enveloping him, and he's like, I think it's supposed to be the scene where he's under the bell tower and tearing Venom off, but also like there's a small Venom head off to the side of him. It's pretty freaking cool. I didn't know it was a Funko exclusive or some sort of thing, and I definitely need it for my symbiote collection. So
I wonder if that was available when I was telling you about all the sales, and you said, "They have nothing that I want." I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know when this became. I've got to be honest with you. I don't think I remember seeing this one at that time.
Sent you a link.
Oh, I'm looking at it now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Symbiote bonding.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I don't remember if they had, if when they had all these Spider-Man on. Whenever we talked about that, like a month ago, they had so many of the Spider-Man on sale. They got the half Peter Parker Iron Spider from the Infinity Saga, which is okay. Mm-hmm. But they do have they do have, and like I said, I did get that one, the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man from the animated show, with the mask up. I do have that one. That one's pretty cool. And the symbiote suit from the animated show would be cool to get too. They have some cool ones, but these were all, hey, the green.
Yeah. I pass up the symbiote suits because my, I call my collection the Teeth and Tongues collection. So if it's just regular black suit Spidey and not actually Venom, I don't count it.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
Elitist, but I can understand that.
And plus I have also got like the poisons, the carnage, the toxins, the, basically any actual symbiote stuff I typically go for. Let's see what else time we got. A while back, I had mentioned, I said I was going to talk about this and just have missed it the past two episodes. I went to a trivia night just up the road about a mile or two. There's a place called Pinballs. And Pinballs, as you can imagine, has pinball machines, but also other arcade machines, a full bar, food. It's, you know, a better Dave and Buster's, a more sort of local niche games, stuff from your childhood, but also modern stuff. You win tickets, you know, you can cash them in, or you can just play while you have a drink around the area. Just all the pinball machines have cup holders attached to them, so you can set your beer there or whatever while you're playing pinball machines. There's like a Godzilla one, a Jurassic Park one, Lord of the Rings, Adam's Family. There's like all these classic ones are over there, in Indiana Jones, Star Wars, just like the most classic pinball games you can think of. So it's a lot of fun. But anyways, they had they were hosting a trivia night. And for those of you who don't know and haven't heard me mention it 1,000 times before, for all the talking I do on a weekly basis on this podcast, I'm actually an introvert in real life. And it takes a lot for me to go out and into public. So I got an ad that Pinballs was hosting a trivia night, and the trivia night was DC Comics themed. So I was like, you know what? Regardless of whether I talk to anybody or not, I'm going to take a step and go out instead of allowing myself to stay home. So I did that and signed up on a team of one, and I ended up in second place. Just narrowly beat out by a team of four people. The prize weren't that, you know, first place prize was like a $20 gift card for all the games, you know, inside of Pinballs, and then like a DC Comics encyclopedia. And then second place was a $15 gift card. So, you know, not a massive thing, but, it was six rounds of six questions. And the first round was Superman, and the next round was Batman, and then Wonder Woman, Flash, and Green Lantern, and then just sort of miscellaneous DC stuff. And the guy did a pretty good job at it, too. Not only did he have like a bunch of slides and stuff prepared and clips in between each round from various DC projects for on the screen while he was counting up points and all this stuff. But he made sure the questions were not just comics. It was some comics related, some film related, whether TV or movies, or actually both. He went for movies and he went for TV and he went for video games. So like he was trying to pull a question from each thing for each character. So I didn't ace the whole thing. Like, you know, it, one of the questions, for instance, towards the beginning of like how many people in live action have played Superman. I'm historically not that great at film and actors' names and stuff like that. So those sorts of questions I had problems with. And believe it or not, I did miss a question in the Green Lantern section because it was. And you'll first of all, first question. Which Green Lantern was possessed by the Spectre? So there was a bit of your boy Spectre Hal in there. But the question I missed was who killed Green Lantern in the Justice League kill the Suicide Squad kill the Justice League video game. I've seen a few clips from that game of Jon Stewart in there and then like of King Shark getting the ring briefly and stuff like that. But I've not seen the moment that Jon Stewart dies in that video game. So I had no idea. But some other questions were like, who's the actor who voiced Green Lantern in the Lego movies? And, you know, just things like that. So I was able to answer all of those and have a lot of fun. And there were some random questions at the end were just sort of general DC stuff, which I was also able to get quite a bit of. My obscure DC comics, you know, Supernatural and, fascination with C and D list characters and stuff came in handy because they slapped a picture of Blue Devil up on the screen and asked, who is this? So
Beast.
they also asked, who is this and what is his real name? And I forgot, man. I Blue Devil obviously got it right away. But for some reason, my stupid brain was like, Danny Ketch is what I came up with, which is one of the Ghost Riders.
Riders, yes.
So what I was looking for was Daniel Cassidy. So like my mind found the right earworm, but I couldn't figure it out for some stupid reason. But it was fun. I got out and about and, now if I'm ever broke and, don't have a lot of money to go out, I've got a $15 gift card in my wallet to, just take a small trip a mile or two up the road and pop in for some video games for a little bit.
That's cool. I'm glad you had fun.
And then a bit of a rant I have because a rant that's almost like has the legs cut out from under it because of what happened today. Today, as we record this, it's September 17th. So one of the things that came out today, and there's not a Lantern issue, but was the Batman Deadpool crossover issue. And I had told you guys something about that there's expected to be a Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon crossover in the backups of this thing. Well, then it was turned out that apparently it wasn't supposed to be. And then it was turns out that it wasn't supposed to be because they meant Green Arrow. And then apparently it was clarified that if they did intend it to be Green Lantern and Rocket Raccoon, and then today as it comes out, there actually is a Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon backup. It's just two pages. I think it's funny. It's not obviously meant to be serious, so it's fun. Mark's read it too. But Bleeding Cool reported on this when it first came out in July 25th. In the headline, Al Ewing writes, Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon announced at SDCC. And then whatever that article was, eventually got amended, and you can even still see it on the article. The subheadline is, Al Ewing writes Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon announced at SDCC, ellipses, or almost. They actually announced Green Arrow Rocket Raccoon. Okay, and then you read the actual article, and two sentences in, the sentence is, but someone must have realized as Marvel just released press for a Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon crossover, which makes a bit more sense. So their article says it's Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon, takes it back, then says it again. And even now that it's all been officially clarified and everything, they still don't address their articles correctly over there. And it just pissed me off because it popped up in relation to I recently got a thing that crossed my feed in my memories at the end of August, back when Batman Fortress had the new Squirrel Green Lantern as a part of its little story. Do you remember? Because I was telling you there was a Green Lantern in Batman Fortress. And because of the fiasco that was Last Ride and all that other stuff, we never ended up talking about it because I didn't want to be responsible for yet another Mark crash out. But Rich had over there put this headline image talking about Chip and all of this stuff, and the image was a badge, and he never got that right. But the biggest aggressor or biggest example of this, and I couldn't find the original article. Do you remember a while back they were talking about Hal Jordan losing his hand and the pitcher was Avarkis Chamuk?
Yes, I do remember that, actually.
Yeah, so it just reminded me over and over again that Bleeding Cool is not to be trusted with anything. They take no ownership of any actual journalism. And as a matter of fact, that memory that had flashed up in my timeline, Rich Johnson himself had said, please don't use the J word. I am allergic to it. So he's just a smart ass over there. And somehow he finds out when we talk about him. I don't know how. I'm sure he has sources or whatever. But it just reminded me to, you know, there's so many different reporting. And I honestly, I can't point you to a specific one because even comicbook.com and lots of other places and Newsarama have some bullshit that they do just because they're trying to get the clicks and add the traffic and all that stuff, which I get, like, from a capitalistic standpoint or whatever, I understand the function of a website as your main source of income is to drive traffic. So, like, I get it, but that doesn't mean you should rely on clickbait headlines to get people's attention or using inaccurate imagery or saying the wrong things in your articles. I take it very personally, and I'm not even truly a journalist. I wanted to be for the longest time, and just because I've been reflecting a lot on my life in the past few weeks and stuff, you know, my job the tech industry guys has had a bunch of layoffs over the past couple of years, especially very recently. So not a lot of places are hiring. My job pays the bills, but I need a raise or I need something to happen, but I can't because I can't leave this job and I can't find another one right now. So I feel very stuck. So I've been fantasizing a lot about things lately. So this hit me at a really specific time because one of the dreams that I don't think will ever actually happen because it's very difficult to do, obviously, would be to be a new Bleeding Cool, a new Newsarama or something like that. Like literally create, not turn the Lantern Cast in that, but for me to start some sort of reporting that, you know, actually takes things seriously and, you know, isn't using clickbait and, you know, all of this stuff and doesn't, you know, stifle opinions just to maintain relationships with big brands and publishers and just like, you know, this idealized version of this. And it just pisses me off that there doesn't seem to be that out there. And the people with that voice that have that audience have no sense of responsibility for it. And it pisses me off. So it just hit me in this right time because, as you can tell, guys, because this is, you know, saying it's Green Lantern and then saying it was Green Arrow, but no, it was actually Green Lantern, and then not walking all that back and updating it now that the actual content is out today, and fixing your articles and shit is not a massive deal at the end of the day. And using a picture of Badge and when you're talking about Chip and like all this other shit, at the end of the day, I understand. I'm nitpicking the shit out of this. I get it. But it just hit me at this very functional moment of self-reflection and dreaming about what these things could be, that it just pissed me off that it feels like they're being so irresponsible with the audiences that they've garnered and not taking this shit seriously. So in the same way that people say, you know, vote with your wallet, if these places rely on the traffic driven to their website by your clicks and their interest in stuff, unfollow Bleeding Cool and your Newsaramas and stuff that do this bullshit, just or block them entirely so that you start driving your traffic on intentionally elsewhere. Vote with your wallets if this kind of shit bothers you like it bothers me. Not the biggest Chad rant at the end of the day, not the most serious one, but it just, like I said, it hit me in that right spot this week.
And just imagine if it turned out it was Green Arrow.
That's true.
This would not have been a relatively calm rant under that circumstance. But you're right. On some level, that did kind of let the air out of the balloon, because it's like, well, okay, so the original solicits were correct. It's just that it's like going back and forth. It's like, you know what, or get off the pot kind of thing. It's like, make up your mind. Is it or isn't it? It's like, you should be able to figure this out. It's like, somebody in your company has to know exactly who's in this story.
Yeah. No, it's... So, like, because my memory in Facebook about the badge thing came up, and it was screenshots of that conversation over on Twitter, all I did was link the article back then and say, someone tell Rich that this isn't Chip, it's Badge, Bleeding Cool, right? And I tagged both Rich and Bleeding Cool, not to be like, hey, asshole, fix it, but just like a gentle nudge about, hey, something's wrong in your article, you might want to update this. His response to that was, oh, that's just an illustration. I don't think it matters much for the story, do you? And I said, to each their own, but one would assume accuracy would matter in the reporting. If it's just, I need a photo of a Green Lantern squirrel, then I suppose captioning the photo a completely different character's name is good enough journalism. And he said, please don't use the J word. I'm allergic to it. So Rich is just a smartass. Now, granted, he's talking to somebody over on Twitter who he doesn't know. So, like, you know, being the smartass is sort of the default for approaching strangers on Twitter. Even back then, but still.
No, I know. I get it.
Yeah, it just irritated me.
I can understand that. It makes perfect sense. If it's not that, it's solicits giving away everything.
Yes, exactly. There's that's why the whole thing about, like, I keep circling back to, regardless of whether it's Jeremy's fault or Zermanico's fault or whatever, at the end of the day, it 100% is the editor's fault. So, like, that, just people being irresponsible with their jobs in that sort of sense is just like, because, you know, like, I would love to be paid to be an editor at a comic company. I would love to be paid to write articles on comic books all day. I would love to be paid to do this. People, you know, sometimes when I talk to family who figures out that I do a podcast or whatever, I've known for a long time, or they ask for an update, one of the conversations is about monetizing it in some way. And I was like, it's kind of difficult to monetize something that's about a very specific medium by a very specific publisher about a very specific franchise. There's not a lot of people looking to advertise, let alone pay for advertising space on something like that, because that's almost the only way you can make money off of something like a podcast is advertising, unless you want to start talking about a Patreon. But that would mean, you know, we would have tiers. People, one of those tiers would be like, hey, you know, subscribe at X level and get an extra episode not released into the main feed each month or something. And would we even want to do that? You know, that's a lot of time, and we already devote so much time and resources and stuff like that to doing this for free. So, like, you know, it's a dream for me, for people to get paid to do almost anything in the comic book field. And when people don't take it seriously, it just cheeses me off, man.
I feel your pain, Chad.
But anyways, brightest day, blackest night, yada yada, green flame on. I'm sure everybody and their mother is going to check out the Deadpool Batman crossover. So confirmed, guys, there is a 2 pages of Green Lantern Rocket Raccoon in there.
But the best ending of all time.
Oh, man.
Bring on a sequel.
Should we close out? Or do you want to talk about these 2 pages?
No, I don't think we really need to. I don't think so. Not at the moment. Maybe when some people have read it more.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Let's see.
I mean, by the time they hear this episode, it'll already have been out a week.
Yeah, almost. But yeah, but no, I have no great desire at the moment to go into detail on those 2 pages. Though it is still funny that. Some things are consistent, and Rocket Raccoon driving the Guardians crazy super fast makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. It's fun, guys. I only had time to read the backup just because I was trying to confirm it existed to begin with. So I haven't read the full thing, so I don't know if I can tell you to devote the capital to that this comic probably costs to get it, because isn't it like a $10 issue or something like that?
I have no idea, but probably.
Anyways, I think that's it though.
Yeah, I think that's it too.
All right. Well, if people want to reach us, what do they do?
LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag Geocast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.